Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the None of the Above show. I have a very exciting show for you planned this evening. Today, I have my friend Casey, that I will get her to introduce herself in just a second. But I wanted to let everybody know, I have had trouble getting interview guests sometimes, so I've only been getting about one or two new episodes a month. I do have stuff lined up, it's just a matter of scheduling. So there will be plenty new more material coming. It just may take a while to get it all recorded and up. And when I can do a live show, I will, but my schedule's not permitted that lately, unfortunately. So I still record it basically just straight through without editing because I like authenticity. I think it's important, and it's important if you're going to do a live podcast. So, Casey, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm just super, honey. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to have you on the show. So, you had sent me a link to your triplexbios.com page, and it mentioned, gosh, I want to ask about this, your debut. A raunchy POV scene with Christian on Pure TS, Mature Blonde TV, Casey Sucks a Cock. And so that actually was labeled TV, and I was kind of curious about that. If you want to tell me a little bit about how you got that gig first, and then I'll ask you some more questions about it.
Sure. I basically wasn't doing any filming, camming, or porn at all. I was doing just escorting. But I also was very, I think, social media savvy, and so I was on Twitter a lot. And I started following different people, and I ended up following Christian Triple X, as his handle goes.
Right.
And one time, he direct messaged me, and he said, "Hey, have you ever thought about doing porn?" And I thought, I kind of did, but I never really pursued it. And he said, "Well, I'd love to do a scene with you." And so I said, okay. He says, "Next time you're out in Vegas." And I was kind of, because I go to Vegas to do escorting.
Oh, okay.
And so I basically was like, okay. And I kept on looking for the right time. And then I finally said, wait, this ain't ever going to happen unless you go. And so I made a special trip out there to shoot with him. And that was my debut.
Very cool. So that's actually a really fun story. I was kind of wondering about, because it had said TV, and so did you initially do it like as a transvestite and then kind of that changed later on?
No, at that point I was very early in my transition.
Gotcha.
And I think it was, Christian is a very smart business person. He, right. You know, everyone thinks all he, I always get these, it's the funniest thing. So many fans and people who get in touch with me were like, he's such a lucky guy, that lucky guy. And those of us in the industry know how hard it is to get where he is or some other people are. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of business.
Oh, yeah, so, definitely.
He's very savvy on analytics and what sells and what doesn't, how to put it out there. And so this was a, what we call a fee for hire kind of deal, and which is most of porn. Like, unlike in the mainstream, let's say legitimate, for lack of a better word, show business, a lot of times you actually get residuals from what you do as an actor, as a performer.
Right.
In porn, so much of it is, look, you come and show up, you shoot a scene, you get this fee, you never get anything else from it again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's the deal. And so, basically, I went out there to do that, and that was the end of it. And then what he does with that content is basically his right to do what he wants. And the way he labels it, I could see how the best way to label it was, since I was early in my transition phase, and I was still, you know, I definitely looked different than I do now. I think what it was, hey, the good angle is TV goes to Vegas and does a blowjob for some unknown guy.
Hmm.
And so that's the way I think it was ended up being labeled, whereas now I'm pretty sure, knock on wood, if I did it again, did something more, it wouldn't be labeled that way at all. You know, a side issue with this, which I think is good, since we were talking earlier about different topics to touch upon.
Sure.
I recently started selling some of my videos on. I'll do a remains nameless thing because I don't want to start skewering anyone, because there's a new platform in the business. It's like a Clips for Sale. It's like a Many Vids, where you basically give them your content and you have a storefront and you sell it.
Right.
And one of the things was, as I was submitting the videos, I was putting tags on it. You were allowed to put up to 5 tags. And for those who aren't aware, tags are basically on, for search engines, it helps them to flag what something is about. Like, for example, even the show might be tagged, for example, transgender might be one of the tags on it. So, or transgender podcast, for example.
For sure, yeah.
So someone could find it. Well, like the tags I was choosing was for some of my videos, like it was, one was a foot fetish. So I choose foot fetish, transgender. Shemale is still be used. That's a whole nother topic about shemale in the porn business.
Yeah, that is.
We don't need to tread that ground again. I think everyone pretty much knows, you know, that it was a commercial thing, and whether it's being phased out or not is a whole deal. But anyway, so I submitted my videos with the tags to this platform, and they process it, and they're going to upload them and put them out for distribution. When they did that and they came back, I was getting some what I thought was odd tags on the day put on them, not the ones that I chose. So, for example, one had sissy. And it was, and this literally was just a solo POV scene of me masturbating and doing some reveals.
Right.
And it came back, you know, with a tag sissy. Another one came back with a tag crossdresser. And it's just that thing of interesting, the way someone who they were just getting into offering this platform and wasn't familiar with transgender porn decided to label these things. And then some were, and it was just seemed random almost, the way someone was choosing, or multiple people were choosing how to tag them. So like I said, I had crossdresser, sissy, what was in the, oh, another one said, we don't, oh, this was the tough one. We don't accept, they said reject it, we don't accept solo male content.
Interesting.
And this was a POV video where I'm just basically laying in bed with my iPhone, masturbating, you know, and just kind of panning up and down on my body.
Right.
And I didn't actually show my face in that one because it was POV. I was just laying in bed doing it. And it's hard to really show your face when you're doing this kind of thing. And I was just like, okay, thanks a lot. Just because I don't show my face, suddenly, you know, a male solo performer, because all you can see is my cock and my body, even though I'm showing my titties. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, hey, you know, I don't have big titties, but I got titties.
Right.
So it was very interesting, the tags they were using. And I know that another producer, a trans producer, Groovy, I can say them because I think they do some good work.
Yeah, they actually, I would agree.
They were actually going to talk to this platform and try and key them in or clue them into, hey, you got to be a little more nuanced with your tags here, because if something's sissy, that's definitely a whole different subgenre of porn. So it'll be interesting to see how they progress. And like I said, I don't want to throw them under the bus because they're new and they're learning. So they were
right.
Service, good support, great people to work with. So we'll just see if they get on to the main program.
Yeah, that's one of those topics that there's models who choose to use tags like sissy and crossdresser, or phrasing like tranny and shemale, and there's other models who find that objectionable and they won't do that. So I think it's something that should be left up to the model, but you do find websites where they will choose tags for your content and pick things that you wouldn't want to use yourself, and labels that have a strong emotional impact for some people. So it's almost like it's something that I think is kind of important in porn, is, you know, the topic of consent. And when you're getting into things that have heavy emotional impact, you're almost kind of having to look a little bit at consent in terms of how things are produced and marketed. It's not literally sexual consent in terms of what's getting filmed, but consent in terms of what happens with filmed content. And that's something that's been a big topic. And I know recently Stephen has reached out to at least one other site in terms of how they categorized models. So that's pretty cool. I really like the direction Groovy has been going over the last year or so, after they got some feedback and started making changes. So that's been cool, because I worked with them last fall and then again earlier this year. And it's really great to see such a big producer of trans porn moving in that direction and encouraging other people to get their shit cleaned up too, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I went to the XBiz LA, it's, for lack of a better word, it's a porn trade show.
Right.
And Groovy put on a panel and we were talking, and they were talking about their decision to really try to start to move away from terms like shemale. I want to digress one moment. It's interesting, sure, too, because when I first started on Twitter, I tagged a couple things, hashtag, with shemale, using hashtags. And I got a blowback from somebody who was in a photo with me. And then I realized, uh-oh, don't ever tag something with that unless it's just me. Because if I decide right, to do it for commercial purposes, that I wanted to show up in searches, mm-hmm, then that's okay, because it's for me. I made that decision that, right, I know it's a commercial term. I'm going to use it because I am a struggling lower tier porn performer. Any exposure I can get at this point without, I'm not going to do humiliating, degrading things, but for search engine purposes, I'm okay with it still.
Right.
But
right,
I also learned that I will never tag again anyone else. If I'm in a photo with anyone, it doesn't get that tag. The most it'll get will be T-girl, TS. Those are the two that I will use with someone else in a photo with me. The other portion was shemale strokers recently made the same decision and jumped in to change
transational fantasies. Yeah.
Yeah. They made that same, because it's a big deal when you're branded and you're search engined and you got to deal with all that. I worked for Groovy way before I ever did any porn, actually on the back end doing QC, quality control, and re-editing stuff when they were acquiring properties,
right,
like Shemale Yum, BlackTGirls.com, I'm trying to think, Ladyboy, something or another. And so they were buying up these properties and their content and bringing them under the Groovy umbrella. So they had to deal with the fact that Shemale Yum, for example, they had a brand, they had a name. So it's not so easy to just suddenly, you know, take oodles and oodles of content that has watermarks on it, for example, in the bottom right corner that says Shemale Yum. You just, removing those things isn't cheap and easy, you know? So it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, and especially trying to remove watermarks can end up leaving kind of artifacts in the image that really degrade the image quality. So it's a question of, like, how much work are you willing to put into it? Are you willing to frame by frame clean up after a watermark removal or not?
Oh, most def. I mean, and that's brings up a whole nother topic, which is just the self-production that we, so many of us do now. And that was the other roundtable at XBiz by Groovy, whereby, you know, when you're sitting there editing your own stuff, just like you edit this podcast at times, I know you try and do it all live, but you know how much work it is if you got to fix sound or fix picture in a video. And so the toolbox that you have to self-produce nowadays is just, it's another thing. How do I take a 90 minutes of footage and now I have to distill it down into maybe a 30-minute, you know, video of multiple scenes? That's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. It's a lot of planning and careful attention to detail. And I mean, it can easily take several days of working all day to do that kind of thing by yourself. If you're really wanting to try to get the best product possible from the footage you're starting with. And then if you have, like, issues with how the picture looks and you have to re-render using a lot of filtering on the video, that's an incredibly slow process. So not only, you know, doing a little bit of noise cleanup and transcoding the video is a little bit time consuming, but if you're having to do major filtering and re-rendering of the video, that can take a half a day in and of itself for a long video. And then if you have an issue with, like, random breath noises from the cameraman and you want to try to clean that up because that's really distracting to the viewer, then you got to separate out the audio track and go through and manually edit the waveforms and then piece it all back together and sync it up again. And people don't realize how much work it can really be to put a video together.
Oh, most definitely. That's, you know, when you're talking about getting paid for your content, you know, content that you produce, well, you know, a 30-minute video, for example, which is kind of lengthy for something that's self-produced.
Right.
The amount of hours that go into, you know, let's say it's, like I said, maybe it took you 2 hours to shoot total, but the person hours in getting that video into a usable product, I mean, there's a lot of work there. And then someone will say, well, you know, why are you charging this much for that video? Well, you know, all of that time and effort has got to be compensated for somehow, if you're going to make a living. And, you know, let's hashtag pay for your porn. It's, we can digress into another topic right now is, something that I've started doing, because you have a Twitter presence, I have a Twitter mm-hmm. presence. And a little behind the scenes kind of stuff was I'd get calls because I escort, and I'll get gentlemen who will say, I love your videos. I love your work.
Right.
And being someone who self-produces and self-distributes, basically, I basically know each and every person that, I shouldn't say know them, but I have an idea of who's buying my content.
Correct.
And I'm like, I know these people aren't buying my content. So what are they talking about? Is it from pirating? Because there's some of that out there, but I don't have a lot of pirated stuff because I'm not a star. I realized they were saying that from seeing my videos on Twitter and social media.
Yep.
That basically when I was putting out a preview teaser of a minute or under, that to them was watching my videos. And I had to rejigger, and I said, you know what? I'm going to start backing off of how much explicit, hardcore content, even teasers, I'm going to be putting on Twitter anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because I want them to actually buy the product, not get off on the 30-second video.
Yeah, that's something I go back and forth on, like, how explicit I want to be doing free stuff. And you'll notice that, like, of the 8 videos, I think it's 8, that I have on Pornhub, and then I have, like, 3 videos on Heavy R, none of those are, like, amazing videos. And, of course, so they don't get as good ratings and as many views, but I don't want to give my best stuff away for free. So if there's something on there that's longer or more impressive, it's usually because it didn't come out good enough for a high def video, or if there's something on there that, you know, it's like a nifty little high def video, it's short. Like, it's just, you know, the scene ended up being so short it wasn't really worth selling, so I threw it up on Pornhub to help promote myself. And so, like, I'll get these comments from people, you know, and they'll talk about liking my videos and stuff, especially people that hit me up on Grindr. And I realize that they're talking about, like, the stuff on Pornhub that's not even my best work, and they're also talking about just the random shit I throw up on my Twitter that, again, is not my best work, and I deliberately leave some of the best parts out of. And it's really funny to get this feedback from people, and they think, you know, oh, all this stuff is so amazing, and they haven't even seen the stuff that I think is the better stuff. But, you know,
most def, yeah, and I'm. It's been about 2 months that I've been doing this holding back of explicit content from Twitter, and I think I've seen an uptick on my paid stuff. Now, it's just too short of a sample size at this point.
Right.
The other new player in the game is the OnlyFans.com, which I'm wondering, and I had a discussion about this on the XBiz.net with industry people, whether OnlyFans is going to become sort of a paid Twitter, in that it's, for anyone who doesn't know, OnlyFans is a place where you have a subscription service. People subscribe to your feed and you can put out videos and pics on there and they pay a monthly fee to see it. And you basically can give it a caption and put a video out there with hashtags and only paid people can see it. So the question is, and I've seen some other porn people, especially the bigger names like Morgan Bailey and Brooke Zanell, who, for just a name two, who they have a pretty good OnlyFans base. And if you look at their Twitter feeds, there's not much anymore of any kind of explicit content from them on right. their Twitter feeds. You have to pay on OnlyFans to go there. So it's going to be, you know, is that going to be that kind of paywall if more and more performers pull back from putting explicit stuff out on Twitter? For as one, Twitter's the one where it's almost anything goes, you know, so you you know, you're not going to get chased off of Twitter if you're just putting hardcore porn out there and you stay away from the taboo stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a question of whether as more and more pull back, will people, if they want to see it, will they actually subscribe to like an OnlyFans to be able to see actual content?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I kind of tested the waters on that. And I set up an OnlyFans and I set my monthly subscription cost to be $0.00 to see if there's actually people who would sign up if I'm literally posting things for free. And like, so I haven't gone and posted a bunch of explicit stuff on there, but I'll do a little bit of behind the scenes type stuff just to see if there's any interest. And so far, it does not seem like really it would be worth trying to make things for my OnlyFans, because I've only ended up with a small handful of followers on that platform, most of which I would probably lose if I went to, you know, even just a couple bucks a month. So that's one of those things, like, I bet it works out really well for people with big followings that everyone knows their name. Just like the people who have big followings who have set up model pages on Pornhub and they're earning a portion of the ad revenue from Pornhub. Like, I set one of those things up, and for my pages on Pornhub, my videos on Pornhub, I've, you know, gotten scarcely anything back from ad revenue. I haven't even come close to hitting their minimum payout. But I know that there are a few people that are able to get some money that way. So I don't know if that's like where the future is going to be or not. And depending on like if SESTA passes and FOSTA and SESTA get reconciled in committee, then that gets agreed upon by the House and Senate and then gets approved by President Trump. We may be looking at a lot more censorship on even platforms that allow nudity like Twitter and Tumblr. And then we may have more people going to OnlyFans. But I don't know. Then again, we might not.
Most def. And I will. My experience on OnlyFans so far has been similar to yours. I've definitely not built any type of following on there that's willing to pay for my stuff. And I've been thinking, like okay, if you are someone with a large following and large name recognition, because you could see the notifications go out on their Twitter feeds, hey, I got a new OnlyFans. Hey, I got an OnlyFans who renewed. So you can see what kind of action they're doing,
right?
Basically, give or take. But, and I have not had that action, so I've been wondering, am I just not going to be able to get that kind of decent following because I'm not a big name? Now, I don't mind doing the experiment because the alternative is I just put it out there for free on Twitter. And to me, that's a no. Because I was like enough, you know, I'm not going to have people you know, seeing my stuff for free and thinking that's all they're going to get, because at the end of the day, that doesn't, Twitter doesn't pay my rent. Correct. You know. So, I mean, I love my fans. I love using the Twitter platform for interacting with them. I just always, now I'm more attuned with the line of, okay, nope, you're only going to get hints and some behind the scenes stuff and promo stuff, stuff going on in my life that you like to hear about, you being the fan. But other than that, don't expect to see. I think it was Nina Lawless who I saw wrote this a couple years ago. I remember her saying, basically, I think, again, you know, I apologies if it's not her, but it was some star who basically said, look, you are not going to see my hardcore stuff here on Twitter. You're going to pay for it. And that's, again, her or whoever it was, that was their line. And they stuck to it. And, you know, it's easier when you have leverage like that, that you are in demand, of course. But, I mean, you know, I'm not getting anything from putting out a lot of my hardcore stuff out there on Twitter, so I'm just sitting no more.
Yeah, I hear that. And I don't think, other than putting like a few seconds teaser out of the handful of hardcore scenes that I have shot with some other models, I don't think I've really put much out. So I have, you know, little 30, 40 second solo videos I'll put up on my Twitter, and then I'll put 5 or maybe 10 seconds of some of the hardcore stuff I've shot with other models as a teaser. And sometimes I get click-throughs and purchases for that, and then sometimes my purchases are just random people from who knows what place in the world. This is based on Clips for Sales approach, which is more anonymous than many vids, but a lot of just random people that I don't think have any connection to my Twitter, because when they buy a clip off my Clips for Sale, does not seem connected or correlated at all with my Twitter activity. So it's one of those things that it's really hard for me to guess what would be effective to do, because I haven't been able to find any correlations at this point.
Yeah, sample size means so much when you're trying to analyze all this stuff, and if you don't have the sample size, it, you know, and time, as well as, you know, sample size plus length of time as you start and try new things. I want to segue, because you mentioned many vids, and because this is one of the things I've interacted with them recently, they are, which is a good thing, I think, they are trying to make a push into trans porn and promoting it.
They sure are.
Yeah, I submitted a blog post a few months ago, and one of the things I noticed was, you know what? I don't see any trans blog posts on, and they do a lot of blog posts for their performers. And I got in touch with their PR department, and they were super nice. And they said, we are making an, we actually, it's funny. Basically, they were like, it's funny you wrote us. We are currently making a push into trying to promote our trans performers more and more. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because I submitted, my blog post unfortunately got lost in a glitch. So I resubmitted it, and they basically put it up there pretty quick. And that same week, they had 4 porn performers: Kristen Craves, Courtney DeMaloon, Mia Mafia, and Sasha Desad. They brought them into their offices, did a live loft with them, did shoots with them, promoted the heck out of the whole thing, didn't ask anything. And I've noticed definitely now there's more trans blog posts, more trans performer articles, both sides, trans men and trans girls. Mm-hmm. So they're doing both sides of it, and I'm hoping to do. They have a Reddit, a subreddit actually, which is dedicated just.
I didn't know they had a subreddit.
Yes, it's now a subreddit for many vids, and they also have the subreddit of that, of MV Trans. It's just started. It's funny because I think I'm one of the only people who actually post things on there. If you go there right now to MV Trans subreddit, I think like 90% of the posts are from me.
Oh my god, I'm gonna have to go there right now.
And I actually, in talking to them, because they had a problem with the moderator thing and it got banned off for a minute. So they, you know, they're in the nascent stages, as they say.
Right.
And I said to them, I said, I'm not going to post too much because I don't want it to look like KCT Girl, the KCT Girl show there. So they're working on it. But again, it's another sign that they are serious about trying to do more with the trans porn side of it. So they should get a shout out. To me, it's, you know, the fact that they're trying all these things is good, because they're going to try and promote it. It's, you know, just like they promote their I'll call my term mainstream porn. I only use that for now because just to differentiate between the two.
Right.
And hopefully, knock on wood, I'm going to have an Ask Me Anything on their subreddit sometime in the near future. I'm in nice. The key for that. They've already done at least one that I know of, a trans performer, Ask Me Anything on Reddit. I'm new to Reddit. I only got on there in the last, I'd say, 4 months or so. I'm still learning the ropes.
Yeah, the subreddit is actually still banned, MB Trans. It was shut down because it was not being moderated. And it looks like Amber Van Sonata posted in Reddit request in January that she wanted to set it back up and has not gotten any response over the last 2 months from admins.
No, I think it's new. It's actually, there's one there. So what you're looking at is that was done, but they reset it up. So there's one that's live. I'm pretty sure that's live on there.
I'll have to look for it.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing, more segues. Always looking for the positive.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I set up on my Twitter feed is I do every Tuesday, I do something called Positivity Tuesday.
Right.
And it's hashtag Positivity Tuesday. And the origins of that, there's a thing called Giving Tuesday. I lost it for a minute. And Giving Tuesday is a mainstream cause where basically, if you think about Thanksgiving weekend, you go from the excesses of everyone getting ready for Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
gorging and everything, the excess of what we eat and drink on Thanksgiving. You have Black Friday, which is the excess of consumption that used to be just in stores. Now you have Cyber Monday, which is then the excesses of online. And so basically there was this organization, Giving Tuesday, said, okay, everyone, on the Tuesday following Thanksgiving, let's try and do something for charitable organizations. Donate, go out and volunteer, go do something to give back.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was pretty cool. And so on, I don't know, I guess it's 3 years ago now, on Giving Tuesday, what I tried to do was highlight it on my Twitter. And I did mainly trans causes, organizations to donate to. And I put some skin in the game. I donated every hour to something.
Nice.
Even if it was just $5, you know, but it was something, and tried to encourage people to do that. And then the next Tuesday, I thought to myself, you know, it took a lot of effort and creative energy in a good way to do something on Twitter that was positive, and it's so easy to be snarky and sarcastic, which I do, but it took some effort and creativity to do something positive. And I said, what about every Tuesday I just do positive stuff? No sarcasm, no snarkiness, just for that one day. And so now for 3 years, every Tuesday, I do Positivity Tuesday. And I try and... Is that tomorrow? Yes,
it is tomorrow.
Oh, God, I got to come up with something. But anyway, every Tuesday, I try and do something all day long with, you know, Trans Lifeline, which is a hotline for transgender people in crisis. Or the Trans Can Work, which is the first major U.S. jobs program for transgender individuals, and get their name out there. Hey, their jobs board is out there. Or like the Trans Equality Center, if they have something going on today, they had their Being Black Immigrant and LGBTQIA in the current state of the country, and they did a webinar today, promote that out there. So always just trying to get the word out with that kind of stuff. That's Positivity Tuesday. And something that's been nice about it too is there's been times recently where members of the trans porn community have been in need. Brooke Zanell was in a really bad car accident a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Seattle. She was up there in ICU and she had no money, you know, she wasn't, everything was just going to SHIT. And so to be able to get her GoFundMe campaign out there to say, okay, see if you could help out Brooke. And last year, Athena Adams had a really bad incident where she was stabbed and robbed. And again, getting that GoFundMe out there to try and, you know, rally the community on Twitter to say, go donate something, get the word out. So to me, you know, when we, Positivity Tuesday, that's a great way to use it when we can, to try and promote not only trans porn or trans adult performer stuff, but this, the trans cause in general. And I just ask people, you know what, once a week, it doesn't have to be my stuff. I love it if you're, hey, you're promoing my stuff for Positivity Tuesday, but still just try and do something, retweet something, like something, just one day a week, you know, try and key down on the sarcasm and the snarkiness and do something positive.
That's true, and it's only one day a week, you know, that you're asking people to be positive, because we already have, like, whine about everything Wednesday, trolling Thursday, fuck with people and flame bait Friday, snarkiness and sarcasm Saturday, shit posting Sunday, moaning and complaining Monday. So why not have Tuesday be for positivity?
And it's most def. And you know, there's something to segue into something else is in our current political climate, especially when it comes to homophobia and transphobia and kind of that little whiplash we're having right now in our society. I think it's Jamie Oliver. Did he take over for The Daily Show? Was it him? Or I think, no, it's not Jamie Oliver. It's Noah something or another who took over on Comedy Central. Regardless, he grew up in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there during apartheid. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And one of the things, he had a comment recently, which I thought was very telling. He said, they used to, during apartheid, they would, of course, there was sarcasm and snarkiness and jokes about how bad it was. And, you know, the leadership would do something just, you know, stupid and crazy. And people would make fun of it, you know, because they were doing it to prop up the apartheid government. And one of the things he said with the recent craziness of what we see going on in the country, like with Charlottesville and so forth, is a lot of people think that if President Trump does something idiotic, or if Charlottesville is just so appalling, they make snarky or funny comments about it and just point out the hypocrisy of it, and then they stop. And his point was, when you do that, you're not taking any action.
Right.
It doesn't get anything done. You have to back it up with something. And that's kind of what social media and Twitter, unfortunately, has given people an outlet at times to do, is they think they are doing something by actually just making fun of something, being sarcastic about it, being snarky about it, and then they're done. They don't think about the issue that, well, you know, I didn't actually contact my congressperson. I didn't make that call or that text or that email, or heck, just voting. And so one of the things we have to guard against is, just because you point out the hypocrisy in something or make fun of it, that's not really action. That doesn't move the needle on getting things done. It might help move some opinion, but if you want to actually do something, you got to be more than just snarky and sarcastic and move on.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. A lot of the people who are so quick to offer their opinion on things are very slow to want to back that up with time, effort, or financial backing.
I'll give you an example on Twitter, because I see Twitter as, it's like the T-Girl adults porn performer's water cooler. That's what I kind of call it. We all go there and we'll share stuff, and it's our water cooler.
Yeah.
I mean, I see Mia Mafia once a year, you know, at the TEAs, but I basically, you know, interact with her on Twitter probably once every other week or so, and
right.
direct message and stuff. But anyway, one of the things with Positivity Tuesday was I would get frustrated because I would put out a tweet or two about someone in our industry who needed some help. Like I was saying, someone got stabbed or kidnapped or whatever, got in a bad accident, was in a bad, or I remember she mailed, actually, no, I'm not going to, I won't say the performer's name, but anyway, she had an ex-boyfriend who like trashed her place,
mm-hmm.
blew up her computer, and next thing you know, she's a cam performer, video performer, and she's got no computer, she's got no camera, because he ruined it.
Right.
So, you know, she put out a GoFundMe, like, hey, I need a little help here with some cash. And I would tweet out about that, for example, and say, hey, retweet this. And damn if I wouldn't get maybe like 2 likes and 2 retweets. And I'm thinking, this is someone who needs some help. And I have about 9,000 followers. Not a ton, but still, you'd think I'd get a few. And so I literally would have to do nowadays, when something big like that happens, I need to go to direct messaging to my network and say to everyone, could you please retweet this? Could
right.
you please retweet this? And that's what it takes sometimes to get people off of the dime, that kind of direct action, because they're so used to, I get it, they're so used to seeing people ask them on Twitter, oh, please retweet this, and it just kind of, I think, just rolls off. They don't even, it's almost like, it's like superfluous at the end of a tweet, please retweet this. Well, generally, I'm the kind of person now, when if it's something, I don't just retweet anything, but I look at it and I say, okay, I'm going to retweet that.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're literally trying to get people just to retweet or just to like something, you have to actually go and say, you, retweet this, please, this is important, and they'll do it. But it's a slog nowadays.
So I'm kind of wondering, because you, and this is maybe jumping a little bit, but the Positivity Tuesday made me think of this, because it's something that not many people do. A lot of people specifically avoid going into things that are too hairy on Twitter because they think it will distract from their marketability. And with your Positivity Tuesday and with retweeting things or encouraging people to retweet things to help performers in need, you're willing to delve into the stuff a little bit that a lot of other people are maybe not as willing to get involved with. And so it made me think of the fact that you had the nominations for Miss Unique. And I was curious, maybe what had gone into those nominations, if you're aware of anything in particular that had gotten you the nom.
I don't know the inner workings from behind my feeling of being nominated for that 2 years in a row. I think it's my opinion, IMHO, as they say. I think it's a way to recognize performers that are self-producing, that aren't, don't have huge followings, but are basically working in the industry, kind of, you're almost like your rank and file. I get the feeling that, you know, for example, there's only, Stephen Grewey broke it down one time in a blog post about, you know, I'll try not to get too into the weeds, but it's kind of like, if they were to do 50 shoots a year, which is a lot of shoots, that's about one a week.
Right.
If they were to use 50 different performers, or let's even say they use 2 performers, that's 100 performers. So for the company that does the trans porn, that's 100 slots, let's say. Okay, well, let's say you use a couple of performers, let's say you use 10 performers twice, because they're bankable. You know you're going to make your money back. You're at 20. Now you got 80 slots. You know, so suddenly you know how many T-girls there are who want shoots. There's not a lot of shoots out there that are going to be backed by the major, you know, your shemale strokers, a.k.a. now transational, XXX, and Groovy and transsensual. And let's, you know, there's only so many shoots out there. And they
right.
have to look at the bottom line and say, who is going to make back our investment? Because they're going to get a producer, they're going to get a camera person, they're going to get sound people, they're going to have editors, they're going to have performers, and it all costs money and studio time. So they're going to look back. Who's going to make back our money for us? Kylie Marie, Brooke Sennel, Nia Mafia, Morgan Bailey, whoever. I'm just naming random people who you know make back bank for them.
Right, right.
So they're not going to be as quick to shoot someone like me or someone like Kristen Craves, who they don't know if they're going to make their money back. So long way of getting back to, they know that for their major categories like Trans Scene of the Year, Trans Performer of the Year, Best DVD of the Year, it's really, those categories are going to end up going to the bigger names just because they're the ones that are doing the most producing, getting produced and shot the most on the most, and most in the biggest, widest distribution and promotion.
Right.
So how do you recognize all the people that are self-producing or even cam girls? Let's go there for a second. Just the fact that, you know, there, as far as I know, I don't think that there's a, a trans cam girl awards specific, meaning like a, its own entity, you know, like the award.
There are a couple that I know of, but they're not trans-centric. And yeah, while there are trans performers who do get nominated and get those awards, they're more fan-originated, and a lot of it's just for cisgender females.
So to me, I think that the Miss Unique category is a way to recognize other performers other than the ones that are in the top, you know, in the top echelon. Again, I'm not trying to grade or, you know, it's just a matter of who's got the most followers, who gets the most eyeballs. That's who I see as the top T-girl performers.
Right.
And it's easy to, you know, they're going to be up there every year, you know, being nominated. So what do you do with everyone else who's self-producing, you know, day in and day out and trying to make it? So I think that's where a lot of the impetus for Miss Unique is to recognize some other people in the industry. I believe you, I was shocked when I got it, because I remember last year I tried to push myself for Miss, what is it, New Face, because I basically was my first year really in the industry.
Right.
So I tried to get a New Face nomination. I didn't get it, and I was sad. You know, sad girl. Let's face it, we all like to be recognized.
Of course.
Then when I got the Miss Unique, I was like, cool, that's nice. I got a nomination. And I'll be very honest, when you're trying to promote and pimp yourself like I do constantly, I ride that nomination all year long.
Oh,
I
absolutely.
All my advertisements, I put it in everything. So I can't complain.
Well, you're now a twice T-nominated performer. So that's a level of recognition.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, in my escort ads, I pimp that all the time. Two-time TEA-nominated performer.
Yeah, totally. I mean, hey, whatever is making you money, keep doing it.
Oh, yeah. And why I appreciate being on your podcast here, why I'm going to do, hopefully, knock on wood, I'm going to be on with Kimber Haven on their radio show, hopefully in the next few weeks.
Awesome.
Because if you're self-producing, even if you're not self-producing, you're trying to get gigs, if you're not constantly self-promoting and pimping yourself and getting yourself out there and doing whatever, no one's going to come knocking on your door tomorrow morning and say, we want to do a full-blown shoot with you. Come on, get out of bed. We're going to come and shoot you. That's not the way that things happen. You know, you got to be hustling and pounding the pavement, even if it's the figurative, you know, online pavement that you're pounding, that you're getting out there. And when I see you had a podcast, I was like, hey, I want to do that. When I see Kimber Haven has a radio show, hey, I want to do that. So it's, you know, you gotta work. You gotta work it, girl.
For sure. So we have like 9 minutes left, and I definitely wanted to cover, a couple things that we had talked about. Maybe we can get to the both of them. One is like hormones, the reality versus kind of what it can be for performers. And then two, doing porn or other sex work as a trans person versus regular mainstream workplace stuff, and like why people might go certain directions.
Cool. I had done a blog post. So if you go to Casey, here's the shameless plug. If you go,
plug yourself.
If you go, in this business, plug yourself has a whole couple of different meanings.
That's why I said it.
I figured that. Shameless plug, kctgirl.com is my my pay site, but also my blog is free. You can see any of my blog posts up there. As long as you're 18, you could see it. And I did a blog post back in the day, a couple years ago, I think it was. And it basically delved into, as I was transitioning, as well as doing sex work, the traditional transitioning, which is a whole, it's not a very well-researched field. I meet with my doctor at the LA LGBT Center, and so much of it is still non-researched stuff. But let's say the traditional transitioning regimen are two things. One, you're going to be on, there's more than two things, but it involves at least you're going to be on an estrogen boost, and then you're going to be on a T blocker, because as your body as a male gets estrogen introduced to it, your body says, hey, something's out of whack here. We're producing a lot of estrogen now. So your body, most of the time, is going to produce more testosterone. So you're not right. Actually getting the bang for the buck on your estrogen. So generally, you're put on a T blocker as well, testosterone blocker, which is going to suppress your T levels and let that estrogen do its magic and give you titties, among other things. I'm being broad. So when I first started, I said, well, I'm transitioning. I need to be on estrogen and I need to be on a T blocker. Well, you know, as I'm a sex worker. I started doing some filming. I was doing escorting, and you know, one of the things they like about me as a T-girl escort or performer is my secret specialness.
Of course.
Well, when you're on a T-blocker, your secret specialness doesn't want to get up for the projects because Now your testosterone level is blocked. And so I remember doing my first shoot with Jasmine Lafleur, and I thought, oh, I'll just cycle down off of my T-blocker for a few weeks. And I got to the shoot, and we started, and the winky wasn't wanking. I just couldn't get it up. And I realized, oh, crap, it doesn't work. And so that is a push and pull of the commerce of being a T-girl performer who meaning the fans, the mainly gentlemen, want to see, you know, your secret specialness in full flight. Well, if you're going to be doing what some would call the traditional transitioning, how do you do that and still earn a living?
Right.
So it is definitely a dilemma. I'm not on a T blocker right now. I have not been for, let's say, I guess it's over a year or so now. And I can tell you the difference between when I was on the T blocker and when I wasn't. I felt a little more feminine when I was on the T blocker. I can't tell you how much or what it was. I can't put my exact finger on it. I just know that when I stopped taking the T blocker, picture me holding my fingers about a millimeter apart right now, there was just that missing. There still is. I remember that feeling when I was on the T blocker and the estrogen. I just felt a little bit better about my femininity. Can't tell you why or what. So there is a difference, but it's the dilemma. And like I said, if you look up on my blog, there's a post somewhere on there about, you know, transitioning and sex work. I can't remember the title at the moment, so it's something that we have to consider as trans adult performers, is how much do you actually want to go and do your transition and complete it? Because there's T-girls have gone post-op, and they're now post-op T-girls. And they're still doing porn, but there's not a lot of them because the commerce is not a lot of good way to make money that way. So
correct.
That
actually kind of covered both topics a little bit.
What was the
motivation for going into sex work versus mainstream?
Oh.
I guess if you want to just like touch on that for a minute.
Yeah, sure. And this probably comes up like I said, that there's this trans can work jobs board, which is the first transgender major full-blown transgender jobs program in the country. It's here in California through the California Restaurant Association. Michaela Mitchelson, I might be butchering her last name, I apologize, Michaela. And anyway, one of the things about it is that, of course, it's trying to get transgendered people in connection with employers who now are trained on how to hire a transgender individual, how to deal with them, issues that come up, how you work with that. But I was talking with one of my admirers who came by to see me today and gave me coffee, so thank you, Eggie. But anyway, we were talking about how it's kind of easier to go into porn and sex work as a trans individual because you're freelance.
Right.
You're working on your own. You don't have to go into an office every day. You don't have to deal with the stress of being the trans person in there.
This is true.
And so it's interesting how, you know, it for me, I look down the road and I say, is there going to come a day? Because I've only done sex work and adult porn, as opposed to anything else. What happens when I'm going to be going back into the workforce and going to work in a cubicle? How's that going to feel? What's it going to be like? And so I think and I've done it, so it's easy for me to say. I think the easy path, there's a partially an easy path for us when we go and do porn and sex work, because we don't have to deal with that issue of integrating ourselves into general society.
Right.
So it's a lot bigger issue than the 2 minutes I'm giving it here. Just something to think about. You know, I've thought about
it. Yeah, and I think that's the kind of thing that maybe I'll try to make a note of that and remember it, and we could probably expand on in a future show. Because I also wanted to go more into your background, because I know in your XXX bios you had said kind of starting with an interest in cross-dressing and then moving towards transitioning later. And my own path to transitioning took some stages, and I didn't realize I was trans at first. So whenever I see something like that, it always catches my attention, because I was not one of those knew when I was 5 years old kind of people. I knew something, it just took me a long time to figure out what that something was. So I want to get to that too, and we don't have time today. But I'm really glad to have had you on the show. This will be up on the Podbean, and we'll eventually make it out to the iHeartRadio and iTunes pages for the podcast. And if you catch this podcast and don't know the main site for it, sfdradio.com, Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, is when episodes broadcast, especially new episodes, and the archives are at noneoftheaboves, that's plural, .podbean.com. I want to thank you all for tuning in tonight. Casey, say goodbye to our listeners. We'll have to catch them again another time.
Thank you, Lyke, and thank you everyone for tuning in and supporting this podcast.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm really glad that I got to have you on the show, and we will have to pick up this conversation on a future episode, because this was a lot of fun. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful night. This is Leica signing off.